From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's May the 5th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's the senior grains analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, the Farm Bill has been extended one more time. The good news is it appears both bodies of the legislative branch hope to vote on it before the end of the month. Oh, and John McCain in the state of Iowa said if he were president, he'd veto that bill. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in this half hour. And the corn planters are moving in the Midwest, but they might be rolling over ground that has yet to be treated for weeds. Aaron Hager from the University of Illinois has some advice on when and what not to do during this rushed planting period. Hey, and don't forget, in just 26 minutes, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL AM 580, public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
Here's how the numbers finished up in Chicago on this Monday afternoon. Futures like this for the day. Wheat pit May contract $7.92.5, 3.5 lower. July futures at 8.05.5, down 3.5 of the day. In December, 8.39.75, down 3.25. May corn futures at $5.82, 20 cents lower. July futures 5.94, down 19.5 on the day. In September at 6.04.5, down 18.75. December futures 6.12. And 3/4 down 16.75. May soybean futures $12.73, down 19.5 for the day. July at $12.86, down 18.5. And the August futures at $12.78.5 in the bean pit, down 13.5. November soybeans down 3 cents today at $12.15.5. May bean meal for the day at $3.24.70, down 7.10 for the day. May bean oil at $57.37, up 11. That may bean oil up 10 cents in the nearby May contract. June live cattle, 91.20, 92.5 cents lower on the day. And the May lean hogs at 74.97.5, $1.57.5 higher. This is the Closing Market Report. Taking a look at the outside market numbers for the day. Crude oil futures climbing to new contract highs today. Last trade at $119.75 a barrel at $3.43, the high for the day at $120.30 in the nearby June contract. July futures at $119.50, up $3.71. May ethanol futures at $252.5, up 4.5 tenths, 4 cents and 5 tenths, and the June futures at 250 and 9 tenths, up 3 5 tenths for the day. Natural gas trading $11.16 and 4 tenths, up 3.38 and 7 tenths for the day. And July futures at $11.38 or 30 cents even, up 38 cents for the day. Propane last trade there at $1.64 a gallon even, and the gold futures are trading at $872.30 now, up $16.20. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 12,975 is just about 83 points lower for the afternoon, and the U.S. dollar now stands at 73.20. That's down 0.29 on the day. Here's what the forecast looks like for the two-state region, Illinois and Indiana, from our own Mike Sola. He says tonight skies will be clear to partly cloudy. There will be a few showers or sprinkles. Those will only be possible in the northern part of Illinois, and that after midnight. Lows will range from 48 in the northeastern part of Indiana to 56 in the southwestern parts of Illinois. Tomorrow in Indiana, Mike says mostly sunny skies. In Illinois, partly sunny, a chance of some showers, a few thunderstorms. Those will develop late in the afternoon, mainly in the western and northern areas. Highs tomorrow will range from 75 in northwestern Illinois to 82 in the far southern part of Indiana. The extended forecast, weather system should bring widespread rain to the area Tuesday through Thursday. The heaviest rainfall expected in the western and northwestern parts of Illinois, with some expectation above 2 inches.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt. We appreciate you joining us on a Monday. Tell me, as you take a look at the marketplace, what do you see as far as today's trade and how that might work out through the coming 4 or 5 days for this week?
Well, that's a good question. Probably the main news item or concern or event during the day was the sell-off late in the session in the corn. Corn held in there fairly well through most of the day. Then we got in the last part of the session there and sort of saw some heavy selling there late. But East corn moved down to the 602 and a quarter area. So as we move through the weekend here, it's going to be important for corn to psychologically hold $6. But back to the sell-off. We feel that it was contributed to some fund activity coming in this morning. There was over 63,000 contracts of corn traded overnight, and that's just a huge amount. It sort of reminds us of the wheat situation a few months ago where the overnight volume was heavy. And we wonder if going into the close, the last part of the day, if a fund was out of position and had to get squared away before the close, and that contributed to the sell-off late in the session. There was some talk about the heavy trade last night is going to be looked into, but we've never heard anything back as far as what took place. So it'll be interesting to see what news materializes this afternoon on the heavy overnight trade and the sell-off late in the day. I think there's probably a correlation there, but a lot of it's contributed to a little bit of a drier forecast, which is the opposite of what we heard over the noon hour. And lastly, ideas, maybe the planning progress might be a little higher than this 25-30%, which the trade's looking for. Typically, we're a little bit above 50, close to 60% done. But as we go through the week, the main theme, the bottom line, will be weather and planning progress, Todd.
Given what happened overnight, did it surprise you that corn futures and soybeans, for that matter, did not follow the crude oil up into, well, crude oil went to new contract highs, but certainly didn't follow it up instead?
In a sense, yes, because they've been moving somewhat together. It's not day by day or tick by tick, but there is a direct correlation to them. Then plus, too, we got a weaker dollar. The dollar's down over 30 points today, and that would stimulate some business. In fact, we even saw some export business in corn. We sold quite a bit of corn to Japan, 105,000 tons of corn, the old crop, and 56,000 tons of new crop. We sold 116,000 tons of old crop to known destinations. So, you know, the over outside markets and a little bit of positive fundamental news. But what it probably boils down to is got to keep an eye on the funds and their position. They're sort of in a liquidation mode. If you've been tracking the funds and their positions, we're starting to see them lighten up on the long side of the equation, and they have all right to do that, but we don't want to liquidate every long because they're the ones that help us get up to these higher levels here.
As you look towards Washington, are you fearful at all of the pressure that's coming from Washington to do something about the food versus fuel debate and their biofuels mandates?
That is a concern. I'm going to jump back to the funds once again on that comment too. Of, you know, if you're a fund, you ran the market up, you might be getting heat on you know, overstating your position or you know, contributing to the higher prices. I think that could be part of it. There could be some pressure for them to back off on their buying power. But back to your original thought there, we are sort of getting a little bit of negative heat in here, food to fuel. But, you know, I think there's some misconception out there on some part that all this food's going to fuel, and that's not totally true. These byproducts have contributed quite heavily to the food side and feed side. you know, a lot of these livestock feeders have moved to that route and was able to capitalize on a lot cheaper DGD products there early, you know, before they caught up with the rest of the industry. But definitely we're probably going to see some measures on backing off on some of these subsidies. President Bush even gave hints of backing off on his support for ethanol, just read between the lines. So that is a concern longer term, but the trend is more towards ethanol still here in the short run. There's still ethanol plants in production and new ethanol plants coming online. So the math still points to a tighter supply-demand balance sheet with the current ethanol demand we have in the equation, Todd.
Yeah, take up the wheat market just a bit for me as it relates to this food versus fuel debate, because it seems to me that really when you look at it, that we've had a demand-driven corn market certainly over the last couple of years, and that is because of ethanol. Most would say that there's 25 to 30 cents in this market that's related to ethanol, and the rest of it is demand from all sources. That number seems low to me, but I've heard that number bantered around. On the other hand, wheat has been in short supply, and that hasn't really been corrected until this point, when we're just about to harvest the Northern Hemisphere wheat crop.
Yeah, we've got a huge wheat crop coming on almost worldwide. Here in the U.S., we've seen a tremendous amount more wheat acres. Europe took away their 10% set-aside, or did away with their 10% set-aside, that is, and that went to a lot more wheat acres. So we've got a huge wheat crop coming on. I think the market is aware of that, and that has sent at least the futures prices here in the U.S. Lower anticipation of that. Newsworthy-wise, you know, there's continued articles and reports of chaos in some countries, especially over the weekend. Saw news articles about Egypt and their wheat situation. But a lot of that, though, is videotape of subsidized programs where it's real cheap food and warrants poor people need to get in line for that. But, two, when you have Egypt selling subsidized bread for 1 cent a loaf, there's naturally going to be a huge line there, even though they live on a few cents a day. Hopefully this wheat crop will stay strong and replenish some of these world supplies and free up some stocks and sort of get some more wheat in the market here to help ease this food inflation.
And finally, I'm going to ask you to comment on something, because this one, when I heard it in the news, and you'll hear it from Dave Dickey in just a bit, that candidate McCain managed to stand up in Iowa and suggest that he'd veto a farm bill and didn't think that subsidies were necessary. What'd you think?
Well, it's pretty well a bold statement. You think he probably would have reworded that a little bit better than that. Yeah. Ahead of an election. That's fairly bold. But when you talk about subsidies, you know, I think you got to look at the big picture of everything in subsidies. What comes in mind, you got to have subsidies, especially on the agriculture side. A lot of that is the food program and food stamps. Then two, subsidies. If you're going to hit agricultural subsidies, you got to wonder about hitting the energy sectors. And some of these oil companies still get subsidies when they're making record profits.
Kurt, we thank you for joining us today.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel is with Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Monday. Dave Dickey will be here in just a moment to take a complete look at today's agricultural news.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In agricultural news, President George Bush signed legislation Friday extending the current farm bill another 2 weeks until May 16th to give Congress time to write a new farm bill conference report that can pass congressional muster. The Washington Journal is reporting today that the sugar program remains a point of contention between the White House and Congress. The Bush administration is objecting to provisions to raise the sugar support price by 3/4 of a cent and to sell surplus sugar to ethanol makers as a buffer against any surge in sugar shipments from Mexico. USDA Secretary Ed Schaefer says language is also needed to prevent abuse of loan deficiency payments. Other areas needing additional attention include dairy promotion import duties, AGI limits, and ending efforts to privatize food stamps. Negotiators are expected to meet tomorrow to clear the bill for a House vote later in the week. The Senate could vote on the bill by mid-May. Meanwhile, Republican presidential candidate John McCain says the latest farm bill proposal is loaded with, in his words, pork barrel projects. I do not support it. I would veto it. McCain made his remarks in Iowa in the heart of farm country, where agricultural subsidies are widely popular. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says he plans to hold hearings on the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. Peterson says he is disturbed by the recent influx of speculative money into commodity futures and the CFTC's lack of interest at a recent public forum to discuss the issue. In Peterson's words, there are some real problems in the commodity futures markets. Argentina farmers say they will limit sales of soybeans and other agricultural goods in a renewed protest against a tax hike on soy exports, but they will not repeat roadblocks that caused food shortages in March. Farmers launched its protest after the government introduced a new sliding scale system for grain export taxes. And major South Korean corn processors have begun importing GMO corn from the U.S. Late last week, 57,000 metric tons arrived in South Korea, the first time the country has imported GMO corn in large amounts for human consumption since Seoul began regulating biotech crops in 2001. South Korea says it cannot get enough conventional corn since China stopped exports and the EU is heavily into the Latin American corn market. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL, Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to be safe out there. Shut the tractor off, or at least put it in neutral now. Take about a 15 to 20 minute nap. It'll be good for you. I know you're working hard. We want you to be safe all season long. If you go to sleep, you can always listen to this program later on your computer or bring it back into your tractor tomorrow or this evening on your iPod. It's right there on our website at WILLAG.org. Speaking of being on the tractor, you know, farmers are out late this season, struggling to get a lot of field work done. I'll have a report on the options that are still available to them for controlling weeds in cornfields. The only thing that can be said year in and year out about weeds in a cornfield, says Aaron Hager, is that they cause yield loss. Hager is an extension weed scientist at the University of Illinois. In this week's edition of the Bulletin, he takes up how farmers should set about controlling weeds in cornfields yet to be planted. Up front and pretty boldly, he says, the weeds should be controlled first.
One concern that we have now is there may be some tendency for farmers to perhaps want to plant first and then worry about the burn down after they plant. And certainly is a viable thing to do. But again, we just want to make sure that folks are aware that ideally we should be putting all the seed into a very clean field without any existing vegetation in there.
This can be accomplished, writes Hager in the Bulletin, by either pre-plant tillage or herbicide application. He says the tillage would provide the shortest interval between the weed control practice and planting, but if fields are tilled on the wet side, larger weeds may survive that operation and continue to be a problem after the crop emerges. On the other hand, some herbicides, 2,4-D in particular, have a minimum interval between application and planting. Several, but not all, 2,4-D formulations are labeled for pre-plant applications, but not all 2,4-D product labels have identical warning intervals, if any, between application and corn planting. The lesson learned here, it pays to check product labels. On that note, Hager says farmers should adjust the herbicide rate to control the vegetation as it stands in the field now. If you're prepaid last fall for a particular burndown herbicide rate, that rate may or may not be sufficient to control the existing vegetation. At this point, it seems likely a farmer will plant corn and worry about weed control later. Hager offers this advice for producers still intent to apply a soil residual herbicide, now pre-emergence instead of pre-plant. He reminds them that closing the seed furrow can be difficult if planting occurs under wet soil conditions. This in itself can lead to establishment problems, but if a pre-emergence herbicide will be applied soon after planting, an open seed furrow provides an avenue for direct contact of the herbicide with the seed. Labels of many soil-applied corn herbicides warn that severe corn injury can result if the herbicide comes in direct contact with the seed. Also, he says farmers should be especially cautious about making pre-emergence applications to fields where corn is within a day or two of emerging. Even if the crop hasn't fully emerged or isn't yet quite visible from the road, small cracks or other openings in the soil surface again may allow the herbicide to come into direct contact with the emerging corn crop. Do not use nitrogen fertilizer as a herbicide carrier if corn has begun to emerge. You can read more from Aaron Hager in the U of I's Pest Management and Crop Production Bulletin online. Search the web for this phrase, University of Illinois and the Bulletin. For U of I Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon, and the folks from the Andersons right here in Champaign County join us to take a look at the cash grain market. Brian Stark on hand this afternoon. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Beautiful day here in Champaign County, Illinois.
Sure is. Should be seeing a lot of field progress going on this afternoon.
Boy, I even saw dust coming out of a field today. That was kind of a nice sight.
Yes, it is. The guys have taken advantage of the nice weather we have the next couple of days before chances of rain come back in Wednesday, Thursday. So we're progressing quite nicely. I would say in this area of the state, we're probably around 75% planted on our corn crop, and we've been very fortunate.
And are they getting a good start on the beans after they get done?
You know, I would say so. Most guys that I've talked to are probably waiting until the weekend or beginning next week to focus on the beans. But I think as soon as they wrap things up and it dries out, by the time the next system comes through midweek, I think they'll start focusing on their bean plantings.
About a minute and 15 left. Contrast where we are here with where maybe the slow spots are in Iowa.
Well, I would say, obviously, we're way ahead of pace. Iowa, you're looking at the western third of the state, about the only part of the state that's been able to get anything done. They're probably 50% planted, but the eastern two-thirds are very wet. I'm interested to see the numbers and how that's going to impact where they are as an entire state. I can't imagine that much progress has been made out there simply because of the wet weather they saw over the weekend, anywhere from an inch to inch and a half on the northern half of that state. So they're still in trouble. The trades eye in that state, Minnesota, Missouri as well. Our customers in Nebraska continue to move along, so I think they're doing very well. And everybody east the Mississippi seems to be progressing along, but it's those three states just west of the river that are cause for concern right now.
Your bids for the day?
569 cash corn. Fall corn is 573. Cash soybeans, 1261. Fall beans, 1130.
Thanks much.
Thanks, Todd.
Brian Stark is with the Andersons, joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Monday afternoon. Back in 2 minutes when we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Hoagie Day. The hoagie was originally created in Philadelphia on Hog Island, home to a shipyard during World War I. Italian immigrants working there would bring giant sandwiches made with cold cuts, spices, oil, lettuce, tomatoes, onions, and peppers for their lunches. By the way, depending where you live, the hoagie goes by lots of names, including the submarine, hero, grinder, dogwood, zeppelin, and poor boy. On this day in agricultural history in 1865, Nellie Bly was born. In 1889, Bly successfully completed an attempt to beat the record of Jules Verne's fictional Phileas Fogg to go around the world in 80 days. Bly was a U.S. newspaper reporter and completed the journey in 72 days, 6 hours, 11 minutes, and 14 seconds. Later in life, she took over her husband's dyeing industries and introduced the steel barrel to the distilling process in America. In 1936, a patent was granted for the first bottle with a screw cap to Edward Ravenscroft of Glencoe, Illinois. In 1904, USDA announced it was considering banning importation of horses from France after an investigation determined that a disease outbreak in Iowa was traced to French horse imports. And in 2006, the Agricultural Research Services announced the development of two new machines to improve cotton lint cleaning. The new machines increased bale weight by 8 to 10 pounds by retaining more good fiber than standard lint cleaners. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Learned Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Learned Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Learned Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Meteorologist Josh Darr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago is on the line for a Monday to take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather. And Josh, looks like we're going to move in the fields a little more this week than maybe we had anticipated, or have things continued to stay wet in the forecast? Which way is it?
Well, I'll tell you what, the rain event here for Illinois over the weekend actually is a little less sparsely populated in terms of totals and coverage than what maybe was expected in the forecast before the weekend set up. So you got a little bit of a nice break here across Illinois. The same can't be said across portions of Iowa and then further east, even across Indiana or Ohio. So it feels like in Illinois right now we do have a good break, and one would argue probably have the best break this past weekend and the next couple of days that you'll have over the next 2 weeks, as the jet stream is a very active pattern right now, and we're going to have one wave come across the Midwest Tuesday to Thursday. Another comes late this weekend. Two more next week. So you get the idea. It's a parade of storms that are just lining up across the Midwest. So I think we just saw our best window. We're sitting in our best window right now that we're probably going to see here in Illinois for a good couple weeks.
A parade that drops how much rainfall?
Well, you know, each one of these events is not going to be that heavy in terms of each individual event. You're probably looking at anywhere from a quarter up to maybe an inch and a half across the belt, call it two-thirds coverage with each individual event. So no excess of 3 to 4 inch events widespread with any one of these events. But if you add the same area gets hit, each of those four events, you are starting to add up to 2, 3, 4 inches. And that's when that, in combination with a cooler bias in the overall temperature forecast the next 2 weeks and limited breaks between each event, you know, that doesn't bode well for being able to get back into the fields before it clouds up again, the next rain event comes over your overhead. So
how likely is it that most places will get 3 of the 4 or 4 of the 4 of these, do you think?
If you're talking Illinois in particular, I think the bias would be the farther south you go in the state, the more likely you are to get hit by more of these events. So the difference between, say, Chicago and Urbana, that's probably the difference in one event. And the further south you go down towards the Missouri Boot Hill, you'll probably get even a higher likelihood of more events hitting.
How about Iowa and then Indiana?
Iowa and Indiana, same story. Iowa, I think you're probably looking at three out of the four events. One may move further south and go across Missouri. Instead, in Indiana, the same thing. Probably at least 3 out of the 4 events, you're going to get the majority of the state having coverage a quarter up to, call it, 1.5 inches. And so it's just, we're in this disturbed pattern, and there's no sign. It's a very actually stable pattern right now, which is highly unusual for spring. Usually you have an oscillating jet stream. That's not the case right now. We're just locked into this pattern, and looks like it's going to be that way at least through the mid-month period.
Josh, we appreciate you taking the time today.
Thanks, Todd.
Josh Darr is with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, and that is today's Closing Market Report. Please remember, you can hear today's futures analysis, the cash, grain report, and weather right there on our website. Just hit WILLAG.org. And be safe out there. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.